Welcome to No Info Phonies, episode
94.
And we are talking about the second half of life with our friend Tracy Giesbrecht.
Yeah, it was a good conversation. And we'll, without further ado, we'll just get started.
Okay, welcome to No Room for Phonies. And we are here tonight with our very good friend Tracy, who we have known since Sebastian was born, like just before Sebastian was born, because that's when we met, right?
Yeah.
And you were our first phone call from the hospital when he was born.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Yep.
You were, and Dave were the first people we called.
Oh, I feel so honored.
When he was born. Yep. Because that was a very hard time.
Yeah.
Like I just lost my mom and all that stuff. And and we had just started coming like to church with you guys and meeting you guys. And yeah, you were our first phone call.
Nice.
9 o'clock in the morning, I think, or something, right?
8:30. Well, you called 8:30.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was born around 8:30 in the morning.
Oh,
so, yeah.
I'm so honored. Never acknowledged that honor before.
That kind of set the tone for the rest of our
friendship. We dove in the deep end
right from the beginning. Right from that's we have always been like. We've kind of dove in the deep end.
Mm-hmm.
So tonight, I wanted to talk about the second half of life because I feel like we're all in the second half of life. So
chances are really good
that we are.
Not in all of our listeners.
I don't like,
maybe most of our listeners.
I don't like to admit sometimes that I'm in the second half of life, but I think that we are. So the book that I have read about the second half of life that I really have liked is Richard Rohr, who is one of my favorite authors. He's a priest, which is funny for me because I'm definitely not Catholic. But his writing is so, he runs the Center for Contemplation somewhere down in the States anyway, and he's Franciscan. He's just a brilliant.
He's a different kind of
priest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I think he got almost thrown out of the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so I always start with a big quote.
I love that.
But I always start with a big quote. And I love this quote that he says is that we are the clumsy stewards of our own souls. Life is indeed momentous, created by accumulated moments in which the deeper I is slowly revealed if we are ready to see it. We are here to give back fully and freely what we were first given ourselves. The most courageous and free act we will ever perform. It takes both halves of our life to do it. And I love that quote because it allows you to be free enough to make all the kinds of mistakes that you need to make in order to be a person and still be okay. Because, right? So that appeals to me. Mm-hmm. So,
I think that this is one of the things I like about him is he's so human.
Yeah.
There's no, like, perfectionism is not a...
No.
Mm-hmm. I love that he's written all these books. Mm-hmm. He's a beautiful thinker. He's a sought after speaker. And we are the clumsy stewards of our souls.
And he feels that
he
is writing about is what he feels about himself. Mm-hmm. And when he shares deeply about some of his own struggles and he had health concerns and, you know, issues and things and the kinds of depression and things that he went through himself, then you think, okay, well, if you're allowed this brilliant man... Mm-hmm. Who's supposed to be able to think his way out of anything, or you're allowed to feel that way, then I guess I am too, right? Because that's part of the process, I think, of becoming the person that you are meant to be, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, but I love his book, Falling Upward, and I've read it. You've read some of it?
Yeah, I'm like as people have heard on this podcast, I've started about 6 books and I'm still making my way through them all.
Oh, I'm surprised.
That's
me too. Absolutely.
And meanwhile,
I
am sitting there with my journal going through every page of the book right to the end.
But that's why it can take so long is because you read a quote like that. I can't move on from that.
No. I write it down.
I can't just read that and then not think about it all day, which means
that you don't read any of the rest of the book. So I just wondered what we each thought the difference between the first two, like the two halves of life are, like what you consider to be. I know what he considers in the book. I know some of that. But I just wondered what you feel yourselves.
Well, I mean, I don't know if stereotypically women get talk about like having a midlife crisis, but men certainly have that. So until I had heard of his concept of the second half of life, I would have said that life is like when you're young and you're, you know, you think you're going to make it big and be important and whatever. And then you reach midlife and it's like the imposter syndrome kicks in and you feel you're nowhere near. And then you have the crisis like, oh my, I don't know if I'll have enough time. And then that's where different men act differently and try out different crazy things to try and recover that youthfulness and stuff. So that would be my own personal understanding of two halves of lives until I read his book, and now I have a different understanding of it.
Yeah.
I don't know what he says about the first and the second half, but I know Dave read this book, and I remember it making an impression on him as well, as he was probably, mm-hmm. well, he thought he would be midlife, yeah. right? And I think that's the, I think that's part of the point too, right? Is the things that you're building, the potential that you think that you had, mm-hmm. That at some point you go, well, this isn't panning out exactly the way I thought it was. But then I think, like you're saying, some people move into, you know, the flashy car, or the next wife, younger, whatever that midlife, a more mature way, I think, or hopefully a way where you can look inside and go, okay, none of those things or accomplishments happened or didn't happen the way I thought they would, but I'm still okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's still okay. Oh, but those weren't the important things after all. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, definitely... Dave's death is a before and after.
Right, yeah. Absolutely.
100%. Of what's important and what's not important and what means something and what doesn't mean.
Well, and you had this like, now I'm in the second half of life.
Mm.
Like, you might have been heading in that direction, but you weren't really like, you were dabbling.
Yeah. We were planning for it.
Planning.
Yeah. Planning for it. Yes. And then all of a sudden... well, that half isn't going to happen at all the way
we thought
it was going to happen, right?
And I mean, I think that, you know, what he is kind of says is that, you know, you learn to live with that sort of feeling that life is just going to happen the way it happens, and you're more accepting of complete opposite of what you thought was going to be.
Well, you thought you had so much control.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? We thought we were building something. We thought, you know, I have the tools in myself to do this and create that. And
And then
it doesn't happen.
Yeah. No, and I mean,
forces around.
One of the things he says is the tools that you need for the first half of your life are not the same tools that you need for the second half of your life. Mm-hmm. That you need completely different way of looking at life when you hit the second half. Mm-hmm. And I mean...
Yeah. I think the reason I like the first line of that quote so much, we are the clumsy stewards of our own souls, is because I think post-traumatic, dramatic death, I spent a lot of time going, what means anything? Where do I find meaning in life anymore? Nothing that I put meaning on before means anything now. For example, health, right? Like I'm very interested in nutrition. I do a lot of reading about it. We eat a really healthy diet. I hate exercising. Dave kept me exercising, right?
Yeah.
We kind of coordinated for a better, longer, healthier life.
Mm-hmm. And then you got...
And then it doesn't mean
and
anything.
And then you got screwed.
Right? And so I was a good while where I thought, I'm never going to care about that again. Uh-huh. I'm. It's never going to matter to me again, right? Mm-hmm. And slowly that starts to come back. And, you know, I feel like it matters to me now because not for longevity necessarily, but for feeling good today,
yes.
Right? And the only thing, and it still doesn't matter because it still ends the same way for all of us, yeah. Right?
Right.
There is nothing, in a critical moment like that, there was nothing that I could find for a very long time that meant anything. And the only thing that I can come up with is basically that we are, you know, what are we here for? What is this
yeah.
about? What
What's
are we here for?
Yeah.
What's the point? You know, and the only thing I can come up with or have come up with is sort of like through the back door, because everything disintegrates, everything dies. Houses that were here in our childhood, we can drive
yeah.
by now and go, they're not there. You know, like everything that we see has the potential to disappear and be gone. The only thing we don't know ends is our consciousness. Mm-hmm. We don't know.
Right.
And there is some pretty compelling evidence coming out of some actual university studies now that are able to measure some things and go, we don't know what's going on here.
Mm.
These studies are really interesting because they went into it to try and find out what some of these experiences around a deathbed are.
Yes.
Why are they happening? Are they the medication at the end of life? Do we emit some sort of chemicals or hormones before we die and whatever?
Right.
They went in to find out what that was as scientists so they could discredit all the woo-woo around
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they ended up going, oh, no. There's something going on
right.
here that
mm-hmm.
that we can't explain, right? So, you know, we don't know. We still don't know what it is. But it's not in the same category as the material world that we see.
No.
That we know for sure, right? So the development of our consciousness, which we could talk about more, about what that means, is the only thing that gives me any sense of meaning or
yes.
purpose to live.
But do you equate the development of your consciousness with the development of yourself?
Sort of. Not in the sort of, but at a different level. So not anything that in the first half of life maybe
no.
we would have. The building of education,
yeah.
the development of skills, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. I equate it more with things like eradicating resentment from
yes.
your heart.
Yes.
From your soul.
Yes.
Right?
Moving past
being
bitterness,
curious about fear.
Yeah.
Mm.
And how fear steers your life.
Yes.
And being courageously curious about what's going on inside of you and kind of elevating above,
yeah.
you know, like you have... You guys have all these creative projects and it does something for you that's outside of the material.
Yes,
mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
That kind of thing, like just a different.
How can I make this work?
Of,
like, how does life.
What is creating beauty do to me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I really like how then that it's the stewards of our souls because
mm-hmm.
it is that.
Mm-hmm.
Taking care of, being a steward, you know, taking care, nurturing,
mm-hmm.
guarding,
mm-hmm.
all of that. But it's at the soul level. It's not just
mm-hmm.
well, I think,
a mind full of ideas.
Yeah.
Or
well, and I think one of the things that Richard Rohr is famous for is taking people inside themselves.
Yeah.
So it's more than yeah,
yeah.
right.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what he does.
Yeah.
So, you know, in your second half of life. And I mean, I think that it happens to some people, you know, kind of earlier because you become that.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just naturally become
mm-hmm.
deeper thinkers and more compassionate and more, like, I think your second half of life is where you look at the world differently than you did when you were trying to survive.
Yeah, in a sense, those things can happen, I think,
anytime,
right? Like, I would say that my kids, having gone through this,
absolutely,
are in a whole different frame of mind than they would have been otherwise.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And I would say they've grappled with the same sort of questions. Like, it's a whole...
Well, and you think of yourself even now with your own mom.
Yeah.
Being, you know, in a home, like, ill, like, all the things that you're going through with that changes the way you see things. And so instead of resisting that, which is what I see as the barrier to moving into the second half of life, is when you're trying to, like, that to me is a midlife crisis.
Is when you're fighting it.
When you're fighting what really needs to happen within your within your wounded soul is where you're kind of looking and saying, I need to be more compassionate. I need to, sometimes you need to get rid of things from your life that are holding you back. So, to me, you know, it's just the difference between the two halves of life is a lot in how you look at things.
Yeah. And I think there's a something to watch as we move in this direction that I think our the structure of our society kind of sets us up to not do this well, in that we have this period of time when we work and then we retire, and then we are less challenged.
Yes.
We're done then. We're done. The productivity that we have come to do, we're done, and we're no longer necessary to the people around us. We still can be, but we feel the...
But you really...
We're allowed to opt out at that point.
But right, you really have to. If you don't want to be like that, you really have to. Like, that's part of this podcast for me.
Yeah.
Is that I had to seek a way to keep myself, like, sharing ideas.
Engaged.
Yeah. And, you know, that's why I help people, and because
to be involved and challenge, like, this is a challenge to set yourself outside of your comfort zone. Do something, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Outside of your comfort zone. That's challenging and new. That's new.
That's again. New. And, and really, you don't have to necessarily see how you're drawing from the first set of skills.
Yeah.
Like, no. Yeah.
No, you don't have to know how that is.
Because it really isn't about...
I know I'm still working, but for me, a year and a half ago, I never pictured myself moving into a managerial position. It was never an aspiration of my life. But, you know, when a couple people mentioned, you know, would I consider it, whatever it, I thought, okay, well, I've taught for 32 years. And so, you know, I still have a few more years of working planned. Do I still want to do the same thing? And I'm like, no. Right. So,
but it's not, but it's for a different reason than status, and which is very much.
But my day to day thing, like occasionally I'm like, oh yeah, I know how to use that software for this educational purpose. So I can help this new teacher do that. But most of the day, I'm using a whole new set of skills that I didn't have to exercise that much as a teacher.
And how's that feel?
It's exciting.
Yeah. So isn't that fun?
It's kind of more energizing.
But then you also have the depth of yourself and what you know about yourself that you bring to the job that can also help people. Like I always said, maturity in leadership is a thing.
Well, there's a little bit of the, you know, when you turn, I don't know, no magic number, but, you know, you turn 50, you stop caring about what everybody thinks about you. Not to be arrogant, cocky as a leader, you don't care what people think of you. It's just, you don't
need to ride that self-conscious.
You're not looking for approval, or you're making decisions for different reasons.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I love the statement that he makes in his book when he says, "No wise person ever wanted to be younger." So, because what a normal goal to a young person is becomes a neurotic hindrance in old age.
Can you think of an example of that?
Well, I don't know. I just think it's funny that he says no wise person ever wanted to be younger.
I'd love a younger body.
Yeah. Yeah. But do you want like to be, really like to be go 35. Through all the... Like your body would like to be 35, but do you really want to go through all those things that you went through as a younger... Sometimes I think I'd like to go through those things with my old brain.
Yeah. If you had a younger body and younger energy,
yeah,
you might want to do... You might go, I'd have done a few things differently.
Mm-hmm.
And with my... old brain, as you said.
Yeah.
With the wisdom, right?
Like, mm-hmm. That's what you're...
Yeah.
I thought that was funny. And I one of the things that I love about him is his... And I think we can have a big discussion about this, is what about grace? Because he sees grace as the foundation for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that grace is a very second half of life thing.
Mm-hmm.
That you really... understand it more. Mm-hmm.
And you can hold grace for others mm-hmm. more
mm-hmm.
and yourself.
I think that there's a, it's an important part of the distinction between what I would say about developing your consciousness and like some sort of skills or perfectionism or even just being good, being, mm-hmm. you know, like at some point, you know, I had this, she's a yoga teacher and a dance teacher once, and I was like, yeah, I was going to sign up for one of your classes and whatever, and I'm really nervous because of whatever. And, you know, she's thin and she's fit and she's young and she's bubbly, and she leaned over to me and she went, you know, am I allowed to swear?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yeah, 100%.
Said, you know, it's all bullshit anyway, right?
Yeah.
And you'd be amazed, like it punctured the... perfectionism and I have to do and I want to do, and you'd be amazed at how many times I think that when I get myself wrapped into even, you know, I need to forgive this or I need to do that or I shouldn't have said that or I
yeah.
whatever, and then you want to go, oh,
it's all bullshit,
it's all about it, but yeah I don't know, it somehow it just like takes it all down a notch and mm-hmm. lets me go, we're all just working on this.
Yes.
And it's whatever is got you wound up usually isn't what it's about anyway.
Well, see, the definition of grace now can be it's all bullshit anyway, so just
that's
relax.
What I think.
And I think church gave grace a very bad rap.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to diss church. I'm going to say religiosity has given grace a really bad rap because grace became like almost like you can't admit that you're pissed off at somebody. You have to have grace for everything and you can't be a real person and you can't say it's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
But real grace is...
It's calling the bullshit.
Yeah.
And still going and still loving.
Yes.
Them, right?
Yes.
Yourself and...
Like putting yourself out there when you know the other person maybe in your mind isn't worth the...
The trouble,
necessarily,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know what's going to happen at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
You don't know.
Right?
You need a lot more compassion for where we're really at.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it leads into the next thing that I was kind of thinking about is like, we need to see each other with truth and compassion in order to be able to live a life that is really authentic or has mm-hmm. integrity.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to be able, and I mean, I like Brené Brown's thing where she says, you don't have to share your deep thoughts and your truth with every single person.
Yeah.
Like there are people who earn it and people who don't. Like mm-hmm. I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
But at some level, you have to get down to the nitty gritty of who you are and what you're struggling with in order to really have.
Well, I think when the truth and compassion starts with you and you're, you know, like say you're pissed off about something with somebody. So it has less to do with them. If we're thinking about our own consciousness, it has less, or our own souls, it has less to do with them and more like, okay, why did that bother me? Like for real, why did that, why is that so offensive to me?
Yes.
And, you know, what am I holding on to? What am I afraid of? What am I, you know, what was offended in me? What, where does it hurt? Who is it? Who
and says what's that? It bringing back from the past?
Or where, you know, ask where it hurts. Where is that hurt? You know, and why? Mm-hmm. Why does it hurt there? And work on your own healing and your own whatever you might, whatever they do next might not bother you as much.
Yes. Yes. You know? And that to me is what kind of, when he says grace is the foundation of everything. If you're not working on yourself, like he says at the top, your messed up, your own messed up soul, then everything else is just harder. So our mature years, I love this whole idea, are characterized by a kind of bright sadness and sober happiness.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I thought that was an interesting description. I don't think he's, well, maybe he is, but I don't think he's specifically talking about grief, but that has certainly been my grief walk.
Luminous darkness.
Yeah.
Like, I love that phrase of the simultaneous coexistence of deep suffering and intense joy. Like, I'm sure there were times when you thought, I'm never going to laugh again.
Yeah.
And then you find yourself laughing and you're like, wait.
And
I'm still really sad.
And laugh and go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoa. I laugh. Yeah. Actually, it's interesting. Yeah. I have felt strangely both of those, yes, mingling, like hand in hand. Sometimes the thing that is bringing you joy has a shadow, right?
Right.
You know, you see something your kids do, or, you know, a new job, or Jenica completed her master's, and whatever it is.
Yes.
And you have so much joy and
but it's
side
that,
by side.
Yeah. I think that if we, like, I often think in terms of like young moms and how they have to kind of post this beautiful life that they're building for their kids
on Instagram,
on social media. And I often think, well, you know, like if we could just come to terms with the fact that life is kind of like moving from one sort of incident to the next, and then in between there's joy and fun and whatever, but there's a lot of life that we have to cope with. And I think, and that's true for everybody.
Yeah.
And yet it makes it very hard for.
And it's everything. And there is a pressure for toxic positivity.
Yes.
Of course, that's happening. This again with my mom. The one day I was just getting ready to leave her, and she, every night when I leave her, you know, thank you so much. I appreciate what you do so much. I love you. Like there's a kindness, the kindness and gentleness that's, the intensity is new. Let's just
right,
say that.
Yeah. Well, that's good because sometimes
it can go the other way.
Yes, it can go the other way.
And she'll say all those things and we were reminiscing about something as I was leaving, and it was a happy memory. And she said, it's been a good life, right? And, you know, for context, my mom has suffered. My mom has had real challenges for her. She's 92 years old. Of course she has. Of course she has. And as soon as she said it, it's been a good life, right? And I said, yeah, it's been good. And I just felt like this shadow crossed her face. And I went, it's been everything, Mom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it kind of pierced. And she was like, yeah, it has.
But it's that's what everything. Life is.
It's been everything. I think where we get hung up and is when we think the goal is happiness.
Yes.
Or our entitlement is happiness, like where we pull
well, and to it, me, happiness. Yeah, and happiness is an ice cream cone.
Right.
Joy is something that you have that sustains you
in spite of things
through
too.
Things.
But there also is that pressure, like you said, you saw the shadow go across your mom's. There also is that pressure to not acknowledge those shadows.
Right. Right. Or to, you know, like, I think it's such a relief when we can say, this was really hard, mm-hmm. you know? So what is the goal then? If it's not to make sure that nothing hard ever happens, no. right?
Well, and I think the fact that the shadow goes across, you know, that shadow is there, if we can acknowledge that that's part of life.
Yeah.
And it's just part of. And also being human.
That you've survived it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've survived it.
Well, like, and he talks about that as we get older, we understand that discernment of everyday life, that life is just, it is what it is. So you go up and, you know, we go out every morning or a lot of mornings and enjoy a cup of coffee on our front porch and enjoy our flowers. That's great. You know, then somebody calls and says something terrible has happened, doesn't downplay the fact that we've
right
like it you just move from thing anything. To thing yeah. And I think as you get older you mm-hmm. and I especially if you've had to live through some stuff mm-hmm. I think it gets easier mm-hmm. to be more discerning mm-hmm. about life
mm-hmm. yeah it's interesting you could look at life like it's just a series of joyful moments that are punctuated by some bad things. But I think people do the other way a lot often. Oh, it's hard, and then joyful, and then, geez, doesn't get hard again. Mm-hmm. You know, yes. like, it's like, yeah. well, and, it depends. We all.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that you have to be willing to, I read this book one time that talked about kind of riding the wave, right? And then it, you know, it always comes back. You
it
know.
Always comes back.
You know, you're on this big high, but.
Yeah.
You have to learn to.
Yeah. Grief can be talked about like that too, right? Like waves of grief, which I have heard and I've understood and I get. My analogy was a little more like labor pains because I was actually really surprised how physical grief is. Mm-hmm. Like really shocked that we could be not talking about anything and I could feel it coming like a labor pain.
But I think
or
deep
also
grief.
Like nausea.
Yeah. I think oh, deep dear. Grief is that.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, very yeah,
like
yeah.
When you're like what, when you're soulmate, right? Yeah. Like there's different levels of it,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. And we would be not necessarily doing anything and all of a sudden I go, "Oh, here it comes." Mm-hmm. Like and it would just roll through my body. But I learned that it's not going to stay. Mm-hmm. Just breathe, you know, just breathe.
Well, and they talk about that. Like I've talked about that a lot when it comes to, we read a book called Permission to Feel.
Mm.
And it's that whole idea that you need to actually feel it all the way through you out to the other
just
side.
Just let it roll through. Yeah.
And then it'll be okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you actually have to do that whole thing of feeling it.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, you
have to cooperate with it and let it go. Because resistance kind of leaves it in there, you know?
No.
Well, it's interesting because I still struggle with like, so we're having a nice morning and then something bad happens. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, I can focus on, okay, everything's ruined. Everything that was nice this morning is now gone and not hold on to it. Oh, it was nice. It's like, oh no, that's ruined. And then the rest of the day, predicting wrongly, is going to be terrible.
And it just happened, so I'm over. Let's go.
But just like
let's go get an ice cream cone.
It's like the first time I ever said the F word. I was like, I'm at a different time pace than you are.
Yeah.
Well, that's been
Well, right. And the other way around too. Sometimes I'm like, okay, snap out of it. And she's like,
I'm still feeling it.
I'm still in it.
It's not through yet.
But I have a solution for you.
Yeah.
That's cerebral.
Yeah.
And sometimes you do that too. But there's been a lot of times where I've had to just like look around the room and go, no, is there anything wrong? Are you in danger? No, you're not. It's okay. You're safe. You're breathing. Nothing's changed from a minute ago to now. I mean, there was a moment where everything changed from that minute to this, but then, and there's some ripple effects of that, of course, you know,
because right. that's trauma.
I was in, you know, I've done lots of therapy along the way. And in the beginning, a few months in, I said to the therapist, can you help me with the fact that every night when I go to bed, I replay the last 10 minutes. Every night I go through all of it or sometimes the whole day. And then this happened and then that happened. Like, can I not do that somehow? And she said, no,
yeah,
you have to do that. Some people get to prepare if their spouse is sick or something, they prepare ahead of time. She said, this is like reverse preparation.
Hmm.
And you will go over that until you don't need to anymore.
Right.
Right. Wow. And there came a point where I didn't need to, where I needed to less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Still every now and then, but mostly. Yeah. I guess I must've part of my brain that was in shock because when you go through a trauma like that, it is a brain injury, right?
Mm. Yeah.
And, so the parts of my brain were still learning about it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Where, you know, my whole self couldn't learn that all at one time, you know, and you just had to keep.
That's going. Interesting though. Like not giving you a strategy for making it stop, but actually continuing to do that till you didn't need to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's.
And I was fortunate because I wasn't going to work the next day or anything. So I didn't have to like, you got to get up soon or you've got to, you know, whatever. I could let it play out for as long as it needed to be. Mm. But
there are people who definitely have to. But I still say when you deny yourself the opportunity to, like, the need to, you know, if you go back to his words, to contemplate it, that you end up taking longer, I think.
If you stuff it.
If you stuff it.
I think so, too.
I think you have to.
I agree.
You have to put it out there.
Yeah.
But.
And there's not a, there's not necessarily a timeline that, like, oh, well, I'll just feel it all and then it will be over.
Yeah, no.
Right? There's also. Right.
I'm going to go in my room for a half an hour. I'm going to feel it all and then I'm done.
Yeah.
Because that's not how.
Again, we're not as in control as we think we are.
No, and I still think, like, not the same comparison at all, but there are times when I even look at my kids sometimes and I think, oh, my mom would have really loved Sebastian and Zachary, and she would have, like, loved having conversations with them.
Yeah.
Like, she would have really enjoyed it. Yeah. My dad, I don't know about that. But
In a different way.
But I'm just saying, like,
No,
you know, where that, and I'm, like, my mom passed away 27 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, but it can still hit you in a wave.
Well, yes, because what people who think you should be over it by now don't realize is that person is not there in your future. So,
right.
Maybe I should be over it for today, but something's going to happen tomorrow and he's not going to be there then either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So there isn't really an over it where the future he was supposed to be in.
Well, you think of the difference between saying to someone you're moving on or you're moving forward.
Yeah.
Like, you don't move on.
No.
But you do have to move forward, but you don't have to move forward at any particular pace.
Yeah.
Right? You can make your own.
And that might look different for everyone.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, when I had the trauma that I had leaving work at you know, when I retired, it wasn't wonderful. And I have moved forward from mm-hmm. that, but very much at my own pace. Mm-hmm. So, and I still am, have moments when that all comes back.
Yeah.
And, well, yeah. Why aren't you over that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we don't.
I don't know.
Well, no. The interesting all about the brain science that they're studying yeah. now, you know, is the how long it takes the brain to heal, and they can, but there's also the promise of like the neuroplasticity and of change, mm-hmm. and even in older adult brains, there's mm-hmm. still the possibility for mm-hmm. so.
Well, the book I'm reading,
there's the soul level, but there's still a biological level.
Well, and I'm reading this whole book right now about the vagus nerve. Mm-hmm. And I just started reading about the whole like biology of it. But there's mm-hmm. a whole bunch of things that you can do to strengthen mm-hmm. that vagus nerve, which controls so much of your, you know, mm-hmm. the neurological part of your.
Yeah. And the
fight, flight.
The fight, flight, freeze syndrome.
So in our development, you know, we often think we do these things so that we can produce more. Like this is, I think, at first half and yeah. the second half. We right. can produce more. We can grow more. We can be better parents. We can whatever. But what if it's all about consciousness or soul, we do those things, like keep our brain healthy in service of what mm-hmm. we're doing with ourselves. Yeah, staying bright, learning yeah. new things.
Yes.
You know, not for their sake,
mm-hmm.
but for our inner development's sake and being on top of it, being, you know, all we have had a few discussions over the last couple of years about medicating and not medicating.
Right.
And I don't mean like the proper kind, like that you would get from a doctor. I mean like self-medication type,
yeah.
type
yeah.
things. And, I have found like there's a lot of that I cannot do because I need all hands on deck up here.
Right.
I don't need to numb something or slow something down.
Mm.
I need like it is intense grief. I need all my faculties yes. functioning as well as I possibly can.
Interesting.
That's how I felt.
Yeah.
That's how I felt because if you numb it, when you unnumb, it's still there.
Yes.
And so.
And there are times for that.
Yeah, and 100%.
The therapist, I talked about that too. And she would say, listen, like, if you've been dealing with this all day in an intense way and you can't get to sleep, take something.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, tomorrow's another day. It'll all still be here again tomorrow. Yes. Like,
right.
that kind of thing, right? Yeah, it's a different take. Do you know, never mind. I'm not going to be able to pull it up. Joseph. Ah, the hero's journey.
Oh, yes. I know of the hero's journey, but
I know exactly who you mean.
I know the hero's journey. We don't care who it is.
Though. Campbell?
Yes.
Yes.
Joseph Campbell, the hero's journey. Where it's about us and our accomplishments and, you know, getting to a higher level, and we are the hero of our own journey mm-hmm. and all yeah. of that kind of thing. A woman who worked with him has since written
The Heroine's Journey?
The Heroine's Journey.
Yes.
Yes.
I heard
another book I'm slowly working my way through.
Okay, now
it's
I
a book
that
I heard on a podcast, but you weren't listening to the same podcast. Okay. And I thought, I want you to
read
that.
It's so good. And it flips it on its head where all of this building and getting skills and learning, education, all of those mm-hmm. things are for the development of your consciousness, not your consciousness, for the development of your hero's. Yes. accomplishment and building and wow. like it's a male, it's kind of a classically male female
right yeah
reversal
mm-hmm. that I need to read that book.
You'll mm-hmm. like it.
Yeah.
Maureen somebody, you'll like it. The Heroine's
That's
Journey.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of his just to kind of wrap things up, he talks about the fact that wholeness comes from meditation, self-doubt, study, and conversation. And creative doubt or curiosity keeps us with a perpetual beginner's mind, growing humble, enduring the mystery of life. And I know you are very much a mystic.
Yeah.
That's why I think you would like reading more of Richard Rohr, because
I'm going to read that other book, which is written by two women, compiling his writings and speeches. And
Yeah, something about love. But that whole thing about everything you read now talks about the idea of curiosity, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I just read a book that talked about compassionate curiosity, where you listen and then you ask questions. Mm-hmm. And but I, that whole idea that wholeness comes from self-doubt and study. And
I love that so much.
To me, I just think that is, like, if we could convince the people in the first half of life that self-doubt, like, how do you
serve you?
It serves you.
Oh, it's appropriate.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, I was watching somebody, saw a young mother with her kids, and she was wrangling a bunch of stuff, and you could see there was renovations happening on this, and she was so confident, and I thought, appropriately so, for your time of life and what you're trying to get through, hats off. That's all really great. But I think we want certainty.
Yes.
Oh. And confidence so much, more than anything. We want to be sure of something.
Yes.
Right? We want to create a narrative we can be super comfortable with. We want to know we're right. And when you start to think for 1 second about how much information there is in the world, what's all going on, and how much about it that you know, how much we don't know about everything, this side of life and the other side, how much we know is so infinitesimally small that we all should think about it regularly and, have a child's mind, a beginner's mind.
A beginner. I just like the whole idea, a perpetual beginner's mind.
Yep.
And enduring the mystery of life. And I like the fact that he said, he doesn't say enjoying the mystery of life.
Yeah,
he
says, oh, no, it's uncomfortable.
Enduring the mystery of life. Because life is just, you know, I really think that us moving to this place, and I think that does happen more in the second half of life, where you kind of say, you know, today is a good day, this hour, everything's going okay, but I know that I don't know what's going to happen. I've only got today. And I know that I can say this, but I have a good friend. He was on the podcast and he talked about this, but he had a very, very serious medical condition, Jim.
Yeah. Well,
it was
the storytelling podcast.
Yeah, the storytelling podcast. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Aortic dissection.
Aortic dissection.
Oh, that's so terrifying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he has today. Mm-hmm. And tomorrow, and maybe the next day, and every day is he's enduring the mystery of life. And so just to, like, kind of
think, I mean, just what you can learn from him and how he looks at life now.
And he's like you can listen to his him talk at the pod. He's whatever, and he messages me stuff all the time and whatever, and he just has that beginner's mind, that, you know, that he loves conversation. He just, that curiosity about life. And it's a real example of really enduring the mystery of life when you don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. Yeah. Even though we all are in that position, really.
I know, but we don't think about it because it's scary. It takes courage to really look at, what we don't know, what we're not sure of. What the mystery.
Yeah.
If you really think about it.
How soon things could unravel.
Unravel quickly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Right. Well, not to end on an unraveling note.
Sorry.
No. It's fine.
But I do think that.
There's a freedom in being uncertain too.
Yes, there certainly is.
Because, well, we know that we have tried to hold on to a certain narrative even when it was a struggle to do so. And there's a certain amount of relief in going, actually, I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually, I don't know.
And I think that that is, you know, that I want to go back to what I would consider as one of my favorite quotes from the top. Can't get my thing to work properly because I don't know what I'm doing. Where he says, we are the clumsy stewards of our own souls. Mm-hmm. I almost think that that's like something that you need to write on your mirror.
I was just going to say tattoo on my forearm.
We are the clumsy stewards of our own souls.
Yeah.
And we will continue.
And we're fumbling along together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? That's really what we've got is together.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when he says, you know, we really do figure out life by conversation, that... Mm-hmm. You know, and the kind of conversation that's authentic, where you're ready to, you know, actually say the things that make a difference rather than just all the, you know, the fluff. Mm-hmm. So we will continue, the three of us, being clumsy stewards of our own souls.
We will continue the clumsy conversation.
Yes.
For sure.
All right.
Thank you very much, Tracy, for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It was very fun. Thanks for having me.
Cool.
Aren't you going to ask me my pet peeve? That's
Yes, I forgot that.
Okay,
so yeah, I did forget, Sebastian. So what is your pet peeve?
Mansplaining.
Thank you.
Even when it's not a man.
I know.
Some women mansplain
too. Oh, they do.
But mostly men.
Mostly men.
Well, you call it officiousness.
I call it officiousness.
Officiousness?
When it's women that do it.
No, you actually need to stand here, and then I need this, and then...
Have you thought about this?
Oh, every time I go, to Fabric Land...
You're not going to get sponsored by Fabric
Land. No, I will not be being sponsored by Fabric Land. Every time I go to Fabric Land, there's some officious woman... Well, exactly, you know, you can't put that there, and how much of this do you really want? And I'm like... Just cut the fabric and do it a little faster if you don't mind.
Well, it's pretty funny because I check in because, I mean, in my career, I've mostly worked with women, a few men here and there every once in a while. But I once I heard the term mansplaining, I was like, oh, I better self-monitor here. So I check in every once in a while. Was that a little... Mansplaining.
He does it.
You don't strike me as.
Oh, he does it when
with
he's,
Pam.
He does
I
it
do.
When he's explaining a.
But it's terrible. Like I can teach somebody else to knit and crochet. The moment I'm teaching her to knit and crochet, she's
Let me show you this, and I'm like, excuse me.
Well, how can I teach you without explaining all the details, and then well, you're just mansplaining?
Yeah. Anyway, and what is your favorite way to spend a day?
Oh, favorite way to spend a day. I love to cook for friends. I love dinner parties. I love them outside. I love new things. So anytime I love the airport, I know I'm a freak. Traveling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I like writing in a coffee shop. I don't know why, but I love to write.
Thank
in
you
the
for saying
shop.
That because I like to read and journal. I do like to do that. And I think that's silly because I have this beautiful, like I can read and journal and whatever, but there's something.
You like to go to the coffee shop
I love
too?
To go to a coffee shop.
Something everybody else wandering around
the
and you
space.
And your own.
Yep.
And I don't want to go to Starbucks. I want to go to like a little, like when we went to Quebec City, there are beautiful little coffee shops like everywhere and people with like laptops and, you know, there's just all that, right?
Yeah.
It's third space.
It's
like,
a vibe.
Like what Starbucks created and their whatever.
I do like the
brand.
Chairs at Starbucks.
Yes.
I will say the chairs
But
are
the
nice.
Independent coffee shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can find them.
I
you
love
can
find doing
one.
That.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
All right.
Thanks for joining us on No Room for Phonies. On August 30th, we will
come back and continue
the discussion.
Reflecting. Reflecting on what Tracy shared with us
about the second half of life on No Room for Phonies.